because of foreign wars we wage. More to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws and too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? The Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people trying to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the damned who went. Taking your rights to self-defense. They say you're stable, but they don't make sense. Not turn into guns. All the unions always ask for. All we buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when there'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the damned.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast of Tapping to the Truth. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all the usual caveats, of course. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, coming to you live from historic Rome County, Tennessee. That is, of course, if you are here listening live. If not, however, whether you're listening via podcast form on one of the great podcast sites out there like iHeartRadio and Spotify and iTunes, or if you're hearing a rebroadcast on one of the great radio stations that are part of the Tap into the Truth broadcast family, not to leave anybody out, but those stations might include KYAH 540 AM, Utah's Talk Authority in Delta, Utah. Might also include WXEI 95.3 FM, the Talk of Crestview in Crestview, Florida. Or possibly WCET 101.7 FM, Columbia Talk in Columbia, South Carolina. Or the newest member, KDIL 105.7 FM, Kennewick, Washington. If you're there, then you're hearing a rebroadcast. So, just in case any of this sounds a little dated by the time you hear it, my explanation for that is the fact that the time of the live broadcast happens to be August 13th, 2019, just a little bit after 8 p.m. Eastern. If you are listening live but can't get into the chat room this evening, it's because the chat room doesn't seem to be working. And it's been a while since we've had that issue. I'm guessing it is a BTR thing. If not, who knows? I do have some crazy weather going on around me, so we're certainly hoping that we're going to be able to stay on the air, that we don't get knocked off. If we do, we'll try it all again. But in the meanwhile, if everything goes as planned, and I said a prayer too, so hopefully it will, we are scheduled to be joined by Mr. Mark Saunders. He is, of course, the writer, director, and producer of the movie Open Borders. Open Borders is an action thriller that tells the story of three citizens turned renegade and their fight for freedom and survival from racial persecution and the globalist agenda in a near-future dystopian United States. interesting concept, and we will talk about that with him. In the meanwhile, there are a few stories that I would like to get to from today, and not the least of which is the Fredo story. Oh, Chris Cuomo. Realistically, he probably is the Fredo of the Cuomo brothers, although they do have kind of a running gun battle going on between the role. Both of them kind of weak, both of them not necessarily intellectual giants. Now, both of them are sizable guys. I mean, I have no doubt that Chris Cuomo could have backed up his threats against this guy who came up to him and was heckling him. I'm going to throw you down these stairs. Come on. It's ridiculous. This is such a non-story, really. They're desperately trying to make it into one. So we'll do this as kind of a quick hitter, but I'll add a little to it. Now, here's the deal. Chris Cuomo overreacted, but he reacted to a personal attack. He is kind of a big guy, if you've ever seen him in person. He's not the kind of guy who's small. He's not easily intimidated, and he likes to talk smack. That much we know from his time as a television anchor. But did he go a little too far? That's for you to decide. Personally, I don't really care, except there does seem to be a little hypocrisy in the air. And that's where I draw the line. Now, I want to give a hat tip to Sean Hannity, who was one of the first folks on the right to step up and kind of defend Cuomo a little bit. Because, you know, whenever you run into hecklers, I don't care who they are and what side of the argument you're on. If you're stepping up to somebody in a public setting, then you're kind of a little bit of a jerk. I mean, really. It is just that simple. I'm sorry, if I'm out at a restaurant with my family and you've heard the show and you think that I'm a bigoted SOB and you want to come up and make a scene at the restaurant, then you're a jerk. If you run into me at the freaking Walmart and say, oh, I know who you are, you know what, you're a white supremacist. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. We'll have to agree to disagree, and you have a great day. That's the extent of about where that conversation should be. And if the person who's come up to me at the Walmart is willing to walk away at that point, then okay, not so bad. You're still kind of a jerk. You're a little bit of a jerk for having done it, but not so bad. Here's the deal, though. This guy was obviously looking to be combative. The hypocrisy from Chris Cuomo, of course, is much the same with the rest of the left. They are constantly whining and crying and being all mealy because Donald J. Trump likes to punch back. People attack him personally. People say things that looks reasonable to them, but there's no proof. Many of the things they say about him just flat out aren't true. They say stuff about him. He punches back. That's what Cuomo did here. It's the same thing. So I'm going to put it like this, Chris. You can't have it both ways. Isn't that what you're constantly telling us? Isn't that what you're constantly telling Donald J. Trump as he tweets and makes fun of you from the White House? And by the way, bad Trump. Now, I don't mind Donald Trump having a little fun at Chris's expense. I really don't. Chris kind of asked for it, for carrying on the way he did, and for them making such a big freaking deal about it. I mean, it's about the only thing I heard about today, and there's plenty of other things of import going on in the world. Let's look at the protest in Hong Kong, for example. Isn't China one of Trump's primary concerns? Shouldn't Trump have been talking about trying to position the United States to help the protesters in Hong Kong? Put more pressure on China. We're in the middle of a trade war with them. Seems like a really good opportunity. Be a really good opportunity, too, if he was to tweet out pictures of these protesters, because guess what? These protesters in Hong Kong, a lot of them were waving Old Glory. They were waving the flag of the United States of America. It wasn't a distress call. It wasn't a case of confusion. It was a case of something the left hates to admit, and that is that this nation and all the symbols therefore are still representative to the rest of the world the ideas and concepts of freedom and liberty. That's what they're fighting for. That's the idea. And they're embracing all the symbols therefore. The rest of the world still looks at America as exactly that. So maybe Donald should have been, I don't know, tweeting about that instead of worrying about Chris Cuomo and his Fredo moment. I don't mind. Be Fredo. I do mind, however, one other thing. And then I said I know that I'd treat this like a quick hit, and here I am still going on it. But there is one other thing. To say that Fredo is like the N-word for Italians, okay, that's complete BS. There literally is no other slur that is the equivalent of the N-word, period. Now, there are plenty of slurs out there for whoever and whatever, and it's a slur. It's a racial slur, and it should offend you. Fredo is not one of them. It's a reference to The Godfather, for crying out loud. It's a reference that's been used on his show before, and if he really thought it was such a harsh dig when somebody else said it on his show, would he not have said, no, we can't talk like that? He's even once referenced himself as Fredo. You know how I can tell you that without a question, without a doubt, that Fredo is not a racial slur? I'm saying the word Fredo. I'm not saying the F word. I'm not saying the Italian F word. I'm saying Fredo. Why? It's a character's name from a movie. It's not a racial slur. But I'm sure from this point forward, the American political left is going to demand that we treat it as such. And you know why? Because number one, Chris Cuomo said it was. Oh, evidently only when it's being applied to him by someone who is a political adversary. But he said it was. The PR folks at CNN also said it is. That was part of their defense, standing up for Cuomo when he went completely nuts. But here's the real reason, because when Trump put out his little tweet making fun of the whole blow-up, Donald Trump used the word Fredo too. So from now on, you know, it is racist. The kicker of puppies and the eater of babies said the word Fredo. So now I'm probably going to get ripped off the airwaves for using the word officially starting by the end of the week or something. We don't know how long it's going to take, but we know it's coming. It's just that simple. I tell you what. All right. The other day, if you listen on a regular basis, you heard me complaining. Now, that's what it is when I do it. It's whining when someone else does it. But when I do it, it's complaining, okay? There is an official difference. I kind of feel a little like a leftist when I say that. But it's true. It's true. I was complaining about some of these presidential hopefuls from the Democratic Party who this past week, on the 5th anniversary of the Ferguson riots, were tweeting out references to Michael Brown and using the term murdered. I complained a lot because Michael Brown was not murdered. Michael Brown was killed in an act of self-defense by a duly sworn police officer who was being attacked. Hands up, don't shoot was total BS. It's been debunked. It was the Obama Justice Department that eventually cleared the officer of all wrongdoings and left no further action on the table. And given the fact that the Obama so-called Justice Department was anxious to prove racism wherever they could, if there had been any, I'm pretty sure something other than go, son, and live in peace would have been what had occurred with the officer in question. But at any rate, it does my heart good to see the Washington Post do a little pushback. They gave 4 Pinocchios to both Harris and Warren. As a quick reminder, this past Friday on the 5th anniversary, as I said, of the death of Michael Brown, these people, including Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren, who were the two most prominent, but not the only two, they were They were promoting the Department of Justice debunked narrative that Michael Brown was murdered by white police officer, gentleman by the name of Darren Wilson. And I actually debated a little bit on whether or not to even share his name, because at this point, I'm sure he's happy to be out of the limelight as much as possible. But you know what? Everybody else is doing it. So that makes for a terrible excuse. But the point being is that he can't stay out of the limelight. So I'm not really doing him any favors if I leave his name out. And quite honestly, I think under the circumstances, he did a pretty dadgum good job. I mean, it would have been nice if nobody had to die. But that kind of wasn't his call, really. When somebody tries to take your gun, then as a police officer, I'm going to tell you, you've already let it get too far. If they're close enough that they can literally have a realistic chance of getting your firearm, you have tried to be too nice. Now, obviously, this person is not following instructions. At any rate, most mainstream media outlets, of course, failed to correct the Democrats, a trend that, of course, didn't go under the radar. Most conservative pundits called it out. People as high up on the standard as the great and powerful Maharishi, a.k.a. Rush Limbaugh himself, had plenty to talk about. But the Washington Post published I'm going to go out on a limb and call it a much welcomed fact check on the statements made by these Democratic presidential wannabes. In the analysis, the fact checker, Glenn Kessler, determined that both Harris and Warren deserved the Post's worst rating, that of course being four Pinocchios, which is of course the paper defines as full-fledged whopper. Translation, they just be lying and they should know it. On the anniversary of Brown's death, Harris tweeted out, quote, "Michael Brown's murder forever changed Ferguson and America. His tragic death sparked a desperately needed conversation and a nationwide movement. We must fight for stronger accountability and racial equality in our justice system." Okay, yeah, pretty words. The murder of Michael Brown, a much needed conversation. You know what? Before Barack Hussein Alu Akbar Obama was elected president, race relations were doing fairly well in this country. That much needed conversation is actually one of, well, it's one of facts that the left doesn't really want to hear, which is, of course, what instantly makes me a racist and a bigot. So I'll move on. Warren, Pocahontas herself, Warren posted an even more inflammatory tweet. Right now, not that I care, but I'm sure Twitter is getting very angry at me. I'll have nasty Twitter messages later from Twitter itself. I mean, how dare you? So, yeah, I really don't know how I could mistake a tweet for a treat, because very rarely is it for conservatives. Anyway, Elizabeth Warren decided to put out on the social media platform, quote, "5 years ago, Michael Brown was murdered by a white police officer in Ferguson." Of course, remember, Elizabeth identifies as part of the Cherokee Nation, which is part of why I went out and bought for myself a brand new Jeep Cherokee. It's all white, and I call it Elizabeth just for fun. Anyway, police officer, white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri, Michael was unarmed, yet he was shot 6 times. I stand with activists and organizers who continue to fight for justice and for Michael. We must confront systemic racism and police violence head on. Ooh, you mean like the police violence where a radicalized member of Black Lives Matter was shooting police officers in Dallas? Not long after the Ferguson thing? You know, all that rhetoric, all that hate that they constantly complain about Donald Trump spewing, I'm pretty sure that the Black Lives Matter domestic terrorists who were shooting at police officers had been emboldened by the hate-filled rhetoric and anti-police officer statements from the bully pulpit of the White House when the occupier of said White House happened to be one Barack Hussein, Allahu Akbar, Obama. But you know what? Elizabeth can't acknowledge that, can she? That would just be bad. Anyway, in this back check of the claims, Kessler doesn't hold back on the two senators, asserting that while there might be legitimate questions about how many shots Wilson fired and whether he acted appropriately in the situation, the Obama Justice Department's exhaustive investigation leaves no room for doubt. Brown was not murdered by any standard definition of the word, and the two senators' insistence on claiming so is outright galling. Harris and Warren have ignored the findings of the Justice Department to accuse Wilson of murder, even though the Justice Department found no credible evidence to support that claim. Instead, the Justice Department found that the popular narrative was wrong. According to witnesses deemed to be credible, some of whom testified reluctantly because of fear of reprisal from the black community in Ferguson, the department produced a comprehensive report to determine what happened, making the senator's dismissal of it even more galling. Harris and Elizabeth Warren both earn four Pinocchios. Now, the Obama administration's 86-page investigative report was based on 40, count them, 40, 10 times 4, 40 witnesses' testimony and a thorough review of all forensic evidence. It concluded that there is no credible evidence that Wilson willfully shot Brown as he was attempting to surrender or was otherwise not posing a threat. Translation, dude wasn't an innocent bystander when he got shot. Okay, that's what that means for the folks that have trouble understanding this complicated language. The Justice Department published on the same day a report on its parallel investigation finding that there was, quote, systemic exploitation of racial profiling of black residents in Ferguson by the department. Harris and Warren, who are both seeking the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination, appear to accept the results of one report, but not the other. I wonder why that is. Can anyone say pander much? Can anyone say Democratic Party narrative? Can anyone say culture war that we're starting to lose because those darned old mean Republicans have started fighting back? Now, that's the real reason they hate Donald Trump so badly, because he's actually doing what they like to do to us. This ridiculous notion that the culture war didn't begin until Donald J. Trump started his descent on the escalator at Trump Tower, that somehow that was year zero in the culture war, it's such crap. The current state of political divide, it didn't start under Obama either. The current state began under George W. Bush. This elevation of division in the country, that's when we started having people come out and say, George W. Bush didn't do anything about Hurricane Katrina because he hates black people. Y'all remember that? That's when the flames became fanned, when the leftists became emboldened, and that's when people started losing their mind, not understanding that, guess what? In America, we're all in this together. We all have a different experience in this country. We do. We all have our own story to tell. It doesn't matter what background we have. What matters is what we're willing to do with the opportunities that we are given. That's where we need to be focused at. If you want to sit back and take an easy out, if you want to sit back and let the government take care of you, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to be angry. You're going to be bitter. You have choices to make in your life, and the number one choice you have to make is what your attitude is going to be. After that, once you decide that you're not going to let circumstances hold you down, then suddenly the promises of one political party start to ring hollow. and the expectations from the promises from the other sound better and better. But regardless of promises, if you're expecting Washington, D.C. to be what solves your problems, you need to reevaluate your whole thought process, period, end of that discussion. So let's get moving forward together, shall we? And no, that's not a reference to the Hillary Clinton campaign by any chance. Anyway, it is time for the Edwards Notebook and for the songs and stories for soldiers of veterans tip of the day. So let's do that. Stay with me. We'll be right back. And I'm pretty sure on the other side of this brief break, I'll be joined by today's guest, the writer, director, and producer of the movie Open Borders, Mr. Mark Saunders. So stay with me. We'll be right back.
Why do we in America allow leftists to redefine words and terms they disagree with for their political gain? Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, in the bizarro world of leftists, words are no longer grounded in specific definitions. At one time, gay meant to be happy, but the leftists were allowed to redefine gay for unnatural sexual practitioners. It used to be considered good and patriotic to promote American interests such as border security, the economy, trade issues, morality, etc. But now, if one is a nationalist, meaning one who wants our republic to do well, the newly left have labeled as being xenophobic and racist. The Bible used to be our societal measuring stick regarding moral standards. Unfortunately, John Dewey-inspired leftists who prefer humanism and Satanism now proclaim that teaching biblical morality is hate speech. The bottom line is leftists prefer evil over good in every life experience and are seeking to shut down anyone who prefers that which is good. I predict that ultimately the dark cloud of leftist lunacy will be burned away by a resurgence of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and a resurgence also of righteousness. I'm Ron Edwards. Let's meet on the next page from the Edwards Notebook.
Ron Edwards, the new voice of America.
This is Dan Perkins with your songs and stories for soldiers, veterans tip of the day. Did you know that the Vet Center celebrated their 40th anniversary in June? Robert Wilkie, head of the VA, said of the Vet Centers, "The Vet Centers have a long-standing legacy of building trust, fostering community, and providing confidential counseling, outreach, and referral services. Over this 40 years, 300,000 veterans from Vietnam and other wars have taken advantage of this great program. Many Vet Centers are participating with songs and stories for soldiers. So here's your veterans tip of the day. It's not too late to ask for help, and there are over 300 centers across the United States with 80 mobile units. Go to va.gov and look for your nearest Vet Center. I've been to some of these, and they're safe places to go. Remember, people do want to help you. This has been Dan Perkins with your Veterans Tip of the Day.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for staying with us through that very brief break. Of course, just as a programming note, I have spoken recently to Dan, and we will be having him back. In fact, tune in Friday night. He'll be with us then. Always enjoy talking to Dan Perkins. But right now, we have a very special first-time guest, Mr. Mark Saunders. First of all, Mark, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us, and how are you this evening?
Oh, wonderful, Tim. Thanks for having me.
All right. Now, as soon as I saw the opportunity to have you on, I reached out to Jackie right away, and I'm thinking, you know, this movie, as soon as I saw now I'm getting tongue-tied. See, this is how excited I am. The premise of the movie itself, it's just you're addressing issues in a fashion that is almost taboo at this point, because you're kind of taking a contrarian viewpoint, and I like that. I'm assuming that comes a little bit from the fact that you are a bit of a libertarian, correct?
I identify more with a Republican you know, but there's some things I like about libertarians too. Smaller government, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But fascinating how the movie came about. You're so right. You know, about 2 years ago, the phrase "open borders" really wasn't that popular. It wasn't around, and it just began to just kind of sprinkle into the conversation. And I was listening to Bill O'Reilly, and he began to talk about some concepts and these type of things, open borders and immigration, and I just began to play that out of my head. And I said, well, what if we really did have this? What if Chuck Schumer's dream came true, right? And we had open borders, what would that look like? And so as I began to play it out in my head night after night, it wasn't pretty. And so the movie's a futuristic dystopian thriller, and somewhat like Mad Max, you know, in that sense. And that's how it came about. The thought for it.
Well, I've watched the trailers. And it certainly is action packed. You've got a feature length filled, it's got that action. But what really kind of ties it here to me is you opened it up, and we've moved forward a few years into the open border scenario. Globalists have essentially taken control, and as a result, there is a lot of racial content involved. There's a lot of strong issue in a faction that will speak to a lot of people, and so much it is the whites in America who are being targeted. And there's clearly a lot of people of color, as the phrase has become, who are running the show. And I'm shocked, Mark, that people haven't come out and told you what a bad, bad man you are for even suggesting that as a possibility. You obviously.
Well, maybe it will be bad. Maybe it will be worse. Who knows?
Right.
But you're right. I mean, projecting into the future, and we thought, well, it could be 4 years, it could be 22 years, but it could be realistically the way we did it. Obviously, we had to figure it out because our main character has flashbacks. It's about 10 years into the future. But one of the key lines, I love in the movie is when Mitchell asks Bronson, she says, how did this all start? And he says, well, socialists were elected. And so it's like, I mean, we're looking around, and if you follow our website, everything we do is Open Borders Movie. So like we're at openbordersmovie.com, and all our social media is Open Borders Movie. But how many of these things have been coming to pass? The things that I thought, we certainly wouldn't elect socialists, and now everyone on stage in the Democratic candidates are socialists, or pretty much profess that. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. The painting of in San Francisco, the school board paying $600,000 to paint over murals of George Washington, the father of our country, paint over all his murals. In Washington High School. How outlandish, and monuments are removed, and so it's really fascinating to see, and the movie's been released this year, just months, and here already things have already transpired that we projected into the future is now.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned some of these things like the mural in Washington High School, because we've of course talked about that here in previous broadcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And
the
point that I always try to make is that when it comes to Confederate statues, when it comes to murals, when it comes to anything that is a touchstone to the past, that is our opportunity to start a discussion. That is our opportunity to learn
exactly
from our failings and our shortcomings. But it is people that are determined to hide our past, to forget our past,
exactly,
that are the ones that will inevitably doom us to repeat it. And that's when those dangerous moments come
exactly
in and opens the door for like what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a revisionist history. You know, they want to rewrite the history, and that's the scary thing. And like you said, you're bound to repeat it if you don't learn from it and if you don't remember it. So it's very important, very important. Listen, America is a great country, right? I've been all over the world. It's a beautiful country. It's an incredible country. But you have to remember this: it's an experiment. okay? It's an experiment, okay? And it's not perfect. And so there's flaws, there's things that have happened. So, but yet it's still the best thing. When I travel, I basically, I've come back before and practically kissed the ground, you know, and ran to a Wendy's and grabbed a burger, you know what I mean? It's that incredible. So it's amazing, but it is an experiment, guys. So and it's a young experiment. I think we're like 243 years old. So it's we're just a baby, you know, and we're not perfect, but we have to hold on to the things that make us great. And one of the greatest documents, the greatest document probably ever written by man, is the Constitution of the United States. So, and the freedoms that it espouses, and obviously I'm a big proponent of the First Amendment. That's what it's all about, is being, you know, free speech. And of course, in this movie, like you were saying, really breaks down into, you know, globalism and nationalism. These are really two of the mainstream thoughts, and we just, you know, we have two great, you know, we have two presidents who kind of espoused that. Obama was a globalist, admittedly, and you know, President Trump is a nationalist, admittedly. So you know, those are the two thoughts, and which one do you want to go for? And so and so basically, the globalist government becomes authoritarian. And it takes away all those rights, it takes away all those liberties, things that we've lived and fought for and for all these years, and it makes our country the envy of the world, you know, or suddenly, boom, overnight. And it can change that quickly. You can see it. I mean, you can just look at Venezuela. I mean, that country is destroyed. It's destroyed right now. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, so again, mm-hmm. You hit on some great points again, and I think one of the biggest things that we have going on is we do have mm-hmm. a generation of folks. There's a good number of people that are in the millennial crowd who have no real experience with some of the real hardships that citizens of this great nation have went through to maintain the freedoms and liberties they have, to set back and bash our open market idea for an economy and our mm-hmm. idea of enjoying liberty. I mean, they don't have that practical experience, and they've kind of been led astray by some folks who would love to actually just open up the borders and have that globalist mentality. And it's frightening that so many people have that separation. I myself would love to send these people to Venezuela for 6 months without being able to leave. I think that would be eye-opening enough for a lot of them.
Yeah.
But
absolutely, take a trip to a third world nation. That's what I would encourage. I think it should be actually mandatory. Everyone under the age of 18 in America should go to a third world nation. It'd be great. They want to invest some good money. There you go. So, but really, you know, open borders is the movie itself is a cautionary tale of open borders in the futuristic United States. And so you can find it at openbordersmovie.com, and you can get it in DVD. You can get digital copies, but it's a warning. It's a warning. And so basically I maybe you think it's a great idea. I didn't think open borders is a great idea. So, you know, it comes out in a dystopian point of view, and really it's provocative in the sense that hopefully it will get people to think. You know, Hollywood doesn't really make you think a lot. It kind of entertains. So I'm an independent filmmaker, so that, you know, my heart is to get people to think. You know, let's think about this issue. Let's talk, like you said. I love what you said. Let's talk about this issue. Let's talk about it, because that's why free speech is so important. Because if you don't have free speech, then you go from action, or you go from thought to violence, and you don't have that intermediate of talking. And that's what the free speech is so important, that we can have a dialogue. We can argue about these things. Listen, I love you, whoever you are. It doesn't matter. You know, I'm still going to love you, even if I disagree with you. And if you hate my movie, whatever, that's great. That's fine. You know, that's your opinion. It's a free country. Remember how we used to grow up like that? We'd say, it's a free country. You can say what you want. Well, it's starting to get like you can't. And that's not a good thing. So,
yeah, you're, again, absolutely right. I love the way you're hitting the points, and I love every aspect here. Now, back to the movie, though. You just recently won a nice award at a film festival.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the film festival and the results there.
Well, Well, that was really great. Yeah, you know, one of the marketing and distribution aspects of film is you enter film festivals. So we've entered like 10 different film festivals all around the world, and some in Florida, some in Texas, and we entered one in L.A., which was the Get Free Film Fest, and it was sponsored by the Libertarian Party, which was kind of cool because I went out to L.A. and got to meet all them I just really enjoyed it, enjoyed the people, and we took Best Feature at the festival. So yeah, it was a great thing to win, and they liked the message. They respected the message, and it's unique, it's original, it's creative, and that's the main thing. You know, it does entertain. I mean, people say, wow, that was entertaining. It's certainly not boring. I think over half the movie was shot in a car, so. Like I said, I was kind of looking for that Mad Max kind of feel to it, so we did that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the real key for a movie like this. It's one thing to have a great message. It's another thing to keep people's attention while you get delivered that message. And we do live in a time where folks have a short attention span.
Yeah, it's hard. We spent a lot of time. You know, on a low-budget film, you have to spend your time on pre-production, you know, and so we extensive amount of time. It was over 10 months in pre-production, and then we did about 15 days of production, and we did about 2 months of editing, and then about 2 months of sound design, and now we've been doing about 3 months of marketing. So it's pretty neat. Yeah, it takes a lot of focus on that writing and getting that right story and the dynamics of it, and it's a beat system is what basically screenwriting ends up being, but it's really cool. And I've seen enough bad films. So I thought it was good. And another thing, it's just different. That's one of the things, if you see a lot of stuff right now, it's just being retreaded, you know, Shaft 57, you know, I don't need to see that.
Right.
I mean, I was alive and saw the original one. So anyway, it's kind of funny, but.
Well, you know, speaking as someone who actually dabbles a little bit in writing, the whole standpoint of trying to write a screenplay is so much more difficult than just a novelization. Anyone who's ever tried it will attest to it. Anyone who hasn't probably has no idea. But all you have to do is go watch a really bad movie and watch these little lines, and suddenly you're watching Mystery Science 3000 making fun of the dialogue. Well, that's what bad screenwriting is. Good screenwriting is hard. So I tip my hat off to you for that alone.
It is. It is a fascinating process. I don't know that I'd wish it on anybody, but I had written I had written many short films, and I've done music videos. I've written commercials, and you know, but a short film was 20 minutes. In fact, this movie was originally a short film. It was 19 pages, and I showed it to my DP, my director of photography. I showed it to him, and he said, "Man, this is so good. We should make a feature out of this." Well, and that's and the rest is history. That's what we ended up doing. Of course, you know, you have to get you really need about 90 pages to normally it's a page a minute is what it equates to, but we stretched it out. We ended up with an hour and 23 minutes, and with only a 64 page script. So there's pretty amazing.
Well, that's where a few extra scenes of cars moving quickly and some gunfire where you don't have to have the conversation comes in handy, just as long as you do that
I
well.
I love a good chase scene. Yeah, I love chase scenes. That's a lot of fun. That's always – I love it, you know, on foot, in a car, whatever, you know. So
right.
It is a little dramatic, but it's a good film. It's clean in that sense. I mean, there's – I don't know if you noticed, but you just watched the trailer? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
The trailer is great. Yeah, the trailer is dynamic. I love the trailer. Intense. Yeah.
Yeah, it certainly sets the tone. I am curious, though, Mark. How is it that you go from your passion of filmmaking, which obviously you had given your educational background, into working in investing? Because the two don't really seem to be It doesn't seem like a straight line path, if you know what I mean.
Well, I will admit that there's some really good things in it, but I will tell you, yeah, it was definitely not a straight line. What happened was I went to film school, and like I said, I did a lot of commercials and videos and stuff, and my dad was in real estate, and I got involved with him, and 30 years later, it was like, wow, where did that go? And and then he passed away, and then I basically kind of, you know, self-reflected. I've had a passion for film, and even in 2016, I did a short film. I was an associate producer and camera op for the guy who was my director of photography, Trent Duncan. But we did a short film on sexual trafficking. So I was passionate about film, but I was, you know, and I said, but when he passed, I just said, you know what, why don't you make a film in 2018? And that's what we did. We basically spent the whole year doing this film, and that's where it came from. Now, well, let me tell you, the really cool thing about that is there's many things in film that have helped me, in real estate investing that have helped me immensely. And I would say the main couple of things are patience, patience and perseverance. Patience in the sense that I understand, because the real estate is kind of normally investing is slow. You know, the rehab, you know, the acquisition, the rehab, that's a long process, the marketing and everything. So that's kind of what happens. You get patience through that process. And this making a film and making a feature film is so hard. I mean, it is so challenging because it's so hard to pull off, to actually pull it off. There's so many no's, there's so many rejections, there's so many unexpected things that happen that most people can't do it. And they say 99% of people who make the first film never make the second film. I mean, it's almost, you know what I mean? It's nearly impossible. And then perseverance. Perseverance through that thing to just keep saying, you know what, we're going to get back up tomorrow and we're going to figure something else out. And it was just to keep going. So I think those things that you know, helped me in real estate really helped me in film. And I have a different way. I noticed that I don't always look at it from an artistic – I have the artistic part, but I also have a business part. And can I tell you a funny thing? Everybody always wants more money. Okay, right? I mean, that's the reality, right? So when you have a budget, you can't do that. It just doesn't work, because if everybody you give everybody more money, then you're over budget. So it's very difficult to say, you know, you're a wonderful person and you're really good at what you do, but I can't afford to pay you that. I can afford to pay you this. You know what I mean? And so I think being able to keep things in budget, it was another thing that really helped me to get it done for the exact budget that we had. So.
Okay. Now I'm ready to nominate you for a political office, because we need some folks. We need some folks that can manage a budget. That sounds. I definitely see where the pros are. I definitely see where the pros are there.
I mean, but how come the federal government? It should be a requirement. It should be a constitutional amendment or something. I mean, my goodness, How can you spend more than you make? It just doesn't. You go bankrupt. You go bankrupt anyway. Good point. A good point. I just wish they would. You know, our state does it. Why can't the federal government do it? It's just a dangerous place to go for our government. And so, yeah, it's a precipice. We're on.
Okay. So you mentioned the short film that you were an associate producer on, and that it was focused on sexual trafficking. And when it comes to the real-world circumstances we're looking at now, in our hopefully timeline where we can avoid the dystopian future that you painted that picture for us, sexual trafficking is still a major component of what's going on at the border, and it's one of those places where – folks that tend to lean to the right want to point it out as an issue of why we can't continue to have this open border, and folks who tend to lean to the left want to have this bleeding heart and say, oh, we've got to help these folks. And they don't seem to recognize the fact that they're actually pushing policies that encourage it and make the problem worse. It seems like a natural progression to go from the one to the other, but these two projects really don't meet too much. But I'm guessing, was there some point, obviously, given from the trailer, there is this idea of, again, sexual control over people. You talked about a breeder program. I caught that in there. And some of these other aspects. Is that still one of the things that's foremost on your mind when you're concerned about the real-life open border possibilities?
Yeah, I've had a lot of time to look at this, because one of the things, if you go to, you know, our Facebook, you know, Open Borders Movie, you'll see, or if you go to our website, openbordersmovie.com, where you can get the movie. But if you go to the Facebook, you'll see just mainly statistics. And so I've just seen statistics after statistics, because I really don't – my thing is to inform people. I'm not – I want to create dialogue. I don't want to tell you how to think. I think you should be able to, you know, let's have a dialogue. But so anyway, but what I really feel like what you're saying is the people, the reason they're doing this is because of votes and because of and power, predominantly the Democratic Party. They're ignoring it because of they want to get the illegals in so that they can get more voters, so they can have more power. And there's two states they want. They want Texas, right, which is going to be probably a long way to get. They're not as close as they are in my home state, Florida. And in Florida, President Trump only won by 1%. Wasn't much. Now, we passed a law in our last election in the midterms in 2018 that we approved, I believe it was 1.4 million felons. We changed our constitution in the state of Florida to allow those felons to vote. That could be enough to switch, to change the election here. So it's very, very close in Florida, and whoever wins Florida will win the election. If the Democrats could win Texas, they would win the election. So it's that's really where I think they're heading with you, with this. And it's unfortunate because, like you said, people's lives are destroyed in the process. You know, President Trump over and over has said – this is a humanitarian crisis. That's the context that this is in. It's not good for them. It's not good for us. It's not good for anybody. Okay? So peace and stability, those are good things. So it's just not a good thing for our country. You heard us. You know, you mess the school system, the economic system, the medical. You know, there's so many. The crime that it is inflicted, we have to have a secure border. I am for secure borders and for legal immigration. But I have some interesting proposals. I mean, let me throw it out there. If we're going to allow 1 million people per year to illegally – and those are the ones that we catch. Do you see what I'm saying? If there's 100,000 mm-hmm. people who are apprehended on the southwestern border per month, that's 1 million people, over 1 million, 1.2 million people per year that came in illegally. Now, how many do you think you got in illegally? Do you ever thought about the percentage ratio of that?
Yeah. We talk about that a lot here.
I think they're catching 33%. I think they're catching 33%, so I think two-thirds they don't catch. So anyway, let's just ignore that for a minute. But let's just say 1 million people got in illegally that we know of. Why are we bringing in 1 million people legally then? If we're going to let in, you know, so we just need to – why don't you stop illegal immigration? Do something you can control. So, I mean, you've got to – there's got to be something done here, you know.
Right.
And so that's just one proposal. I mean, because the numbers are getting to be astronomical. It's, some say it could easily surpass 22 million illegal aliens in the country right now. I think it's there or above that. That's what I would project easily. So.
All right, Mark.
So
you know what?
People are getting hurt in the process. Yeah, and that's what we don't want to have. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, this is true. I just glanced at the clock, and time has flown by. That's always what happens with good conversation. I've enjoyed
Absolutely.
It. What I would love for you to do right now, as as we get ready to wind down, is first, I want you to tell the folks a little bit about this upcoming event you have going on August the 16th. And then after that, I want you to feel free to share all the websites. And if you're still inviting people to follow you on social media, feel free to share that as well.
Yeah. Well, I think the main thing, if you want to check out the movie, it's a great movie. It's about a man and his family who are fighting for freedom and survival against their globalist enemies in the futuristic United States. And all you have to do is go to openbordersmovie.com. That's our website. You can check out the cast. You can check out the creators. You can check out a poster. You can check out how to order it. And what you can get is you can get DVD copies, old school, right? We got DVD copies. They're $15. We'll ship them to you. Or you can get a digital copy, which, you know, those you can download those digitally. We're on Vimeo On Demand. We're also on Amazon. So but those links are, you can go to the website and you can just click on the links and it will take you right to those digital downloads that you want to do. So that's really cool. We're actually having a theatrical premiere this on Friday night. And so we're going up to the Villages, which is a big place here in Central Florida. And we're starting off with a week run up there. The theater manager loved our movie, and he's going to play it up there at the Rialto Theaters. And so that's a fantastic thing. We're reaching out to other theaters around the country, independent art house type theaters, and hopefully we'll get there. And just hope you enjoy the movie. You can contact me on my on the same place, on the openbordersmovie.com. You can there's a contact page, and you can. I'd love to hear from anybody. You know what your feedback is, what you like, what you dislike. That's what we're doing. It's a good movie, Open Borders, a cautionary tale of open borders in the futuristic United States. Check it out.
All right. And again, for all those listeners in the Central Florida area, you'll be having a Q&A session right after the showing. Is that correct?
Yeah, 7 o'clock. The showing is Friday night, August the 16th at 7 o'clock at the Rialto Theater in the Villages. And after the film, we'll do a Q&A with an after party to follow. So we'd love to have anybody from Central Florida come on out and meet us, greet us. I'm going to be there. A couple other cast members are talking about being there. So hopefully you can come out and meet us. And it's always an interesting thing to be able to ask questions. And but feel free to do that on the website, too, you know.
All right, absolutely. Mark Saunders, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Best of luck to you. And remember, the one really great part about all this insanity that's going on is it means there's plenty more topics for you to get over that hump, get that next full-length movie out, and continue the good work. Thank you, sir. And hopefully we'll get to talk
you,
again
Tim.
Soon.
Really appreciate being on your show tonight, and thank you for letting me share my heart. Really enjoyed it.
All right, so thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mark Saunders. All right, so that's that. And now, of course, we are out of time, but I certainly hope that Mark Saunders continues this good work. I think the whole point here is that it is thought-provoking. There is a strong message. There is a warning. And he kind of flips the script on the typical idea of how the whole dynamic in this country is, and it's done that way for a purpose, to get you thinking and to get you talking. In the meanwhile, speaking of talking, as I always say at the end of each broadcast, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in some effort, but more importantly, be prepared to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. Thanks, everybody. Good night. We'll see you again tomorrow. Just a little bit.
is using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao Amin, and Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. Is using both hands. Using both hands.